This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by iFixit, the free online repair manual for everything. Before you start your next fix or build, head over to iFixit.com and check out their high-quality parts, tools, and guides. For $5 off your purchase of $10 or more, go to iFixit.com/TWiT and enter the promo code KNOWHOW at checkout. Do not attempt to do anything that we're about to show you.
We have no idea what we're doing.
Know-How, it's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Palliser.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to open up the Ziploc bag of knowledge and cram it full of juicy WannaCry stuff.
That's right, and it's probably going to infect you.
It probably is. The show notes for this are going to be a little bit different because I will not be giving you links or files to any of the stuff we're going to be playing with because you really shouldn't be playing with it.
And if you do see links to download something, don't do it.
It might be the last thing you ever see on that computer. Mm-hmm. Folks, of course, we are talking about WannaCry. It swept across the world this last week, so we thought we might want to do something a little special for our Networking 102. Now, last week on Networking 102, we talked about premise wiring. This week, we're going to do something a little bit different, which is deliberately infecting your network.
This is a bit of a hot topic,
This came
out within the last couple of weeks.
Just the last week. I mean, it got big on Friday, and so we were less than a week into this thing. The funny thing is a lot of the traditional non-tech media is treating this as if it's done. It's gone. We solved it.
Right. It's been patched. Everything's over with.
So not the case. WannaCry, we know by looking at some of the statistics that it's hit at least 300,000 computers. That's the low end. The high end is up to 400,000 computers. We know it's hit computers in 200 plus countries. So it's all over the world, especially hit over in Europe and Asia. Which, by the way, coincidentally, is also the largest installed base of Windows XP and Windows XP pirated software. So
right.
It probably has something to do with it.
Which is no longer being updated. Yep. And even if it was pirated, may or may not have been getting patches anyway.
Right. Now, we know that it's just been growing and growing, and some of the effects have been, I don't want to say blown out of proportions, but they've really caught the imagination of the public. For example, the British healthcare system. They had so many XP installations that got crip-locked by WannaCry that they actually had to turn patients away. They had to send them to other facilities. You had car manufacturers, everything from like Nissan and Volvo, who had to shut down their plants because their industrial computers were infected because a lot of them are using like old XP embedded installations.
Wait, so crypto ransomware software isn't like a new thing.
No,
why is this
not
one being so blown out of, not blown out of proportion, but why is it infecting so many machines?
Well, because this is a little bit different. So you're right. Crypto ransom software has been around for a long time. The way it works is typically you either receive an attachment or you get a link to a site that's running some sort of scripting attack against you that will allow you to execute a file.
Right.
So that's the first component of it. The thing is, this is not just that. When I think of crypto ransomware, I'm thinking just the bit that fools me. It's a Trojan horse that fools me into running it so that it can encrypt my computer, and then it holds my data for ransom. Typically, they'll say, you pay us this much in bitcoins, and we'll give you the password to decrypt your files.
Right.
Yeah. This added a dimension to it, because WannaCry is not a virus. It's not even a worm. It's actually three different attack packages in one.
So it's a multi-pronged
attack. So here's the first part is the part that, as you mentioned, we've all seen before. It's the crypto attack. Right. So it's just a piece of software that once run will go through all the data files on your computer looking for everything from documents to images to videos.
And connected drives too that
and
you have?
Anything that it touches. So if it's plugged in via USB, if it's a share that you have access to, if it can touch that file, it will encrypt it.
Okay, that's
how that works. But then the second package, and this is the one that's getting a lot of attention, was actually a weaponized exploit developed by the NSA.
So that's where things get a little interesting.
Called Eternal Blue. So they made this thing to attack what's called SMB. It's the old version, up to 1.1. That's the server message block, also known as Samba. So when I'm talking to, say, the TriCaster, I'm actually speaking Samba.
Doesn't sound like you're speaking Samba.
It has rhythm.
It's got salsa.
SMB, also known as SIFS, the Common Internet File System.
Okay.
It's just a way for a client and the server to talk so they can exchange information.
Okay. It's a protocol?
It's a protocol. Now, the one that we're using in the Twitch studio, it's the upgraded version of Samba, but if you running XP, you don't have that. You didn't have that until Microsoft released an emergency patch.
And this only affects XP?
No. Oh. It will actually infect all versions of Windows, including 10, but the Samba component doesn't work on 10.
Okay.
Because that's been patched.
Which is only one part of the part of the attack.
Okay. Let's talk about how this works. So do you remember when we talked about overflow attacks, buffer overflow?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a location in memory that I am saying, okay, this is where the program is, and this is what you're going to run. Correct?
Correct.
And that's how it works. That's how memory works. That's how processors process.
Right.
What the Samba exploit will do is it was a very, very subtle error made in the programming for what's called a memory allocation move. Mm-hmm. So when I need to expand my memory or when I need to move memory from one place to another, I typically give it an index, and then it offsets the pointer by that index, and it runs what's in the new spot. Two parking spots.
Right.
And I had my car over here, and I move it over there, 10 rows down.
Because you need more space?
Let's say I'm in a timed parking spot, and I need to move every 3 hours.
Okay.
Now, I write down in my notebook, I'm in the same spot, but 10 spaces over. That's essentially what I'm doing. In the programming of Samba 1.1 and below, they actually had what's called a type mismatch. They were supposed to be able to offset by 16 bits, 65,536 places. Mm-hmm. They offset by 32 bits, which allows me to choose a position
in between
that's not actually where my car is.
Okay.
And if I can do that, I can make the computer, the operating system, run arbitrary code that I want. And in this case, it's running this worm package.
Okay, which then initiates like the encryption stuff?
Well, no. So the crypto part initiates the encryption. Mm-hmm. The Samba exploit, Eternal Blue, the one developed by the NSA, what it will start to do is it will look first at its own network. It will say, who's on my network? And then it will start probing the SMB protocol on all those computers. If it finds one that's vulnerable, it will overflow it, make it run the exploit code, and now that computer is infected with the entire package.
And then that one searches everything.
And every time this happens, it's going to blast out the network again, looking for vulnerabilities. And it also looks out onto the internet. Now, here's the fun thing, and this is one of the things that security researchers are sort of doing a collective smack my head. Samba, so the SMB protocol, is TCP port 445.
Okay.
There is absolutely no reason why that should be open on the internet. Inside your network, yes, because your computers want to talk to each other.
But on the internet.
But there's no computer I would want to connect via Samba to a computer on my network. That's just stupid.
Yeah.
Remember we did we showed people how to do port scans. You should port scan your network. If 445 is open, that's a problem. You should shut that down.
Right. So that's basically it's just having your computer open to the internet.
Yeah.
But just through that protocol, I guess?
Right. So yeah, exactly.
Through Samba?
So if this is the internet, and let's say these are individual networks. So this is a network, I have to go through this gateway to talk to these. Mm-hmm. If one of these computers gets infected, it can try to infect the others. So let's say they get an attachment or they get a link that they click, right?
Yeah.
But there are a couple of computers that are still directly exposed. They have like a real IP address and they've got all those ports open.
Right.
If that's the case, absolutely. They are vulnerable to get infected by one of these computers because it doesn't have to go through a gateway. It starts probing the internet. If it finds that one, open 445, it's going to try to do the SMB exploit.
And then it just keeps propagating from there.
Keeps propagating.
Huh.
But that's not all. There's one more component.
Oh, yes.
And that component is it's called the double pulsar. It's a backdoor. So it installs a piece of software on your computer. Even if you pay the ransom and decrypt, that backdoor is still there. You have to know how to remove it. Otherwise, it just means they could always come back into your system.
And own it if they wanted to later. Yeah. Wow. And so a complete format, would that get rid of it?
Yeah, you could just.
You don't sound so sure, though.
I mean, the code, from what we see in the code, it's it's virulent, but containable. Okay. We know what it can and cannot do.
It's not going to like hide itself on a part of the hard drive. And
No. I mean, it's actually not very elegant software. We'll talk a bit more about that. But you know what? People don't want to hear me jabber on. They want to see what this actually looks like.
I guess I'm just learning about this because I've heard of ransomware, but this seems like this is ransomware with a few different ways of it getting to you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So let's go ahead and take a look. If you go over to this computer, this is a Windows 7 computer that I created. The other one. There we go. Okay. This is a Windows 7 computer. So I'm going to go ahead and come in. This is a fresh installation. Which, by the way, was difficult because whenever I'm doing this kind of work, and by the way, I'm not a security researcher. I'm not an expert in this. I just know how to play with it.
Yeah.
I don't like using VMs because there are too many malware packages now that can be VM aware. They know
they're
a VM and they don't exhibit regular behavior.
Really?
They kind of hide from you.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, this is actual hardware. What I've done is I've actually just made a lot of clones. So, Kara, if you go to the overhead, this is just an old ATX motherboard. I've got an SSD, but I've also got a stack of SSDs, and these are all clones of the same operating system. So I'm going to infect these, and then I'll just swap them out, and I get a brand new fresh one.
Okay.
But the nice thing about using this kind of a setup is I know that this is going to mirror real world.
And it's contained, right?
Yeah.
We don't have this hooked up to anything else.
But not
on our network.
No.
No, not on the Twit network.
No, just it's its own private little network.
Yeah.
All right. So go ahead and go back to my computer. There we go. So I've got a couple of things on here. This is the payload. So thanks to Lost, by the way. Lost Boy, he's the guy who makes the badges for DEF CON. Fantastic guy. He helped me track this down. This is not the original variant.
Didn't he send it to you in this?
Yeah.
This little package? It says, warning, may contain dormant cyber pathogens?
Yeah, just...
It's serious.
This is not a joke. That's serious. Don't mess with that. But if you go back, so this is not the original variant. This is one of the ones that's been slightly modified. Mm-hmm. This actually doesn't have the kill code in it. So the kill code was discovered by accident by a British researcher, and he found out that when you started up the software, it beaconed out to a website that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so he registered the domain. And once he did, and that beacon started getting a response, which it was a TCP session. So it was not just UDP. It was a connection. It would not run.
Huh.
So it was a kill switch website.
Right.
And
people
thought, oh, it's solved. But then they just made new variants that didn't have that.
Didn't have, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, and actually, this variant doesn't have it. So this does not have a kill switch.
Makes it sound so dangerous.
Better, right?
Yeah, it's totally better.
Okay, so go ahead and go back to this. Since this is a clean computer, I put a couple of files in here. So these are just text files from old know-how projects.
Mm-hmm.
They're all readable right now, which is what we like. That's how it should be.
That might change.
So this is the payload.
Mm-hmm.
There's many different ways that you can get this payload. The first is something that we already mentioned, which is if your computer is vulnerable to Samba 1.1, which this is. This is Windows 7 from 2015, so it has not been patched. You can just be infected over through the Samba protocol. It does a remote execution, and now you're infected. You could also receive this as an attachment, and if you run the attachment, you're going to get infected.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could, say, get like a PDF file that's running something off of a server for remote code execution.
Right.
You can also get infected. So there are many different ways to get infected. Essentially, this is going to act like any crypto ransomware.
So you could go to a URL that then initiates the script and then just runs this?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It's worse on XP. 7 is at least a tiny bit protected. Oh, by the way,
10.
We'll talk about this later, but people have asked, well, will this affect you if you're not running as administrator? Yes, 100%. It will. So that's not going to protect you. But this is something you should not do. Let's go ahead and run it.
So imagine,
okay.
We went to a
so
website.
Automatically, you see a few things have happened here. Let me start with the task manager.
It drops some files on the desktop.
Yeah, there's a bunch of files on the desktop. And if I go to my processes, there's one here now that's using up 25% of my CPU. That's one of the first warnings. But, of course, if you see that, it's already probably too late because what it's doing right now, it's going through all the files it can find on this computer, and it's encrypting them. And this is how fast it is. Let's go back to our sample data. Look. Oh, no.
So, oh, wow.
See? So what it's done is I'm actually capturing it in the middle. This is the encrypted version. The original version is still there. So it's still going through all the files on my computer. Mm-hmm. And as soon as it's got them encrypted, it's going to delete all the originals.
And the encryption itself isn't like a nefarious thing, because you can download encryption programs to encrypt your stuff.
Yeah.
But you're the one that owns the key.
Yeah, they're going to own the key. Now, see, this is what happens. Like, for example, even if I change this back to doc, let's do this. Yes. Mm-hmm. If I try to open it up, see, now it deleted all the original files. See that?
Oh.
They're all gone now. So and this is all happening in the background.
Oh, that's messed up.
And so now if I try to open it, look what it looks like.
It doesn't recognize the file? Okay, or open, no. It's trying...
Well, actually, hold on, let me change...
Oh, I see.
It was, X. Let me change the name.
It was trying to find, yeah.
The file. Yeah, there we go. Oh, I'm trying to type today. I'm trying to type on a monitor that's far, far away from me.
I keep walking up to the screen, yeah.
Let's make it bigger.
Make it bigger.
There we go. Okay, so if I open this up... There we go. It's, yeah.
So it opens up the dock, but it's gobbledygook.
Look what's at the very top.
Oh, so it puts the WannaCry header on there?
Which is what we call it. So, yeah, this is an encrypted file, so I cannot read this. Now, if I'm going to let this sit for a while, because it's still priming. It's still going through its thing, and something's going to happen in just a bit, and it's what most people will see the first time they've experienced WannaCry. But, Kara, come back to us while we wait for this. It's going to take a while. I mentioned elegant attacks.
Right.
And an elegant attack would not be this. It would be something like the Stuxnet virus, which allegedly was developed by probably the United States.
It
was
maybe a collaboration.
With Israel. But it was a virus like this. It started off as a Trojan that also had a worm payload. And that was elegant because it was looking for a very specific target. What it was looking for were centrifuges.
Right.
Specifically...
Nuclear.
The types of centrifuges that are used to separate nuclear masses.
Right.
Right. And what it would do is, if it did not detect a centrifuge, it put all the attention on spreading. It would spread to any USB drive, any network connection that it could. Mm-hmm. Once it found the machines that it was looking for, it would oscillate the operating frequency. So the centrifuges would speed up, slow down. Essentially, they tore themselves apart.
Wow.
And we know it was probably a nation-state attack because if you look at it, it was a virus, a worm, a payload specifically designed to take out nuclear enrichment.
Right.
So. That's not a for lulls attack. That's something that, you know, someone had a target in mind.
That's not a script kiddie. That's not even like a criminal organization.
There we go. Okay, if you go back. So this is the screen.
What happened to my computer? Yeah. Can I recover my
files? This is going to tell me. So look, it's got the date, and it says, hey, you know what? You've got 3 days. So you now have 2 days, 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 44 seconds to pay us $600 in Bitcoin. this one's 300. Yay.
300?
Yep.
And what's a Bitcoin going for these days? Isn't a Bitcoin like $1,000?
Yeah, that's not bad.
Jeez.
Now, you can decrypt. It will give you a taste. So if you hit decrypt, it will let you decrypt some of your files, but it's basically just tease you, saying, oh, no, see, I can bring them back. Now, you want the rest of them?
Man, that is really... that's devastating if you see that.
Oh, by the way, well, look at this.
What's going on here?
it's Windows security saying, hey, I think something's happening.
Wow. Something did happen.
Here's the thing. Windows is still operating. Windows still works. So it didn't like destroy the operating system. It selectively went through and found all the data files. And on this particular case, this is the only data files. And if you go here, if you open the README, they tell you what they've done.
Wow.
And the scary part about this is if you look through the files that it dropped here, it's got complete loadouts for all the languages of the world.
Oh, wow.
So they intended this to hit as much of a target surface as possible.
And there's nothing you can do other than pay them and then decrypt your stuff? And
people think they're going to brute force the crypto. I've never heard of a successful case of doing that. I'm sure there is, but I haven't heard of it.
Well, then, I mean, what guarantee do you have even if you pay that they'll give you the key?
Well, that's the business model. I mean, if word gets out that they're not giving your files back, then no one
will pay.
Yeah.
I did read an article, too, where people were... they weren't able to pay because it's so complicated for people to know what a Bitcoin is or even, like, use a Bitcoin. So that, like, a lot of places, they're like, we don't know how to pay with a Bitcoin. So it's just that stuff is gone.
Wah, wah. It's kind of sad, right?
It makes me want to cry.
Well, it all makes you want to cry. All right, so the way that I deal with this is I now consider this an infected drive, which is...
So if you were to plug that into, well, not another computer, but onto our network.
Actually,
here, would that start...
Very good point. I'm going to switch inputs here really quickly, Kara. You're going to get my computer, because I want to show you what happens if you plug this into a Windows 10 machine. Again, folks, do not... do this at home. We're doing it so you don't have to.
This is getting me a little worried.
It could get me a little fired.
Don't worry. We're not trained professionals.
We are not trained professionals. We have no idea what we're doing.
Don't do this at home.
So I've got a little USB enclosure. Kara, do you see my computer on HDMI 1?
Yeah.
Okay, if you could go ahead and bring that up. Now, this is my personal laptop. It's running Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
Look what happens when I plug this in.
I'm hoping it says, no, go away, bad.
See at the bottom? Threats found.
Windows Defender.
So Windows Defender is not letting anything on that run, which I like that.
That's good.
But this is how I made my my clone. So I'm just using Acronis, their true image.
Uh-huh.
And what I have is I already have another SSD plugged into this. With a clean version of that Windows 7.
Right.
And I'm just going to copy it back over.
Okay.
So as we're working, it's just going to go ahead and redo it. It's going to wipe out everything on that drive.
Starting fresh again.
Start nice and fresh. Now, I could do this with VMs, but again, I'm kind of a junkie on using this method because it gives me the purest results.
Yeah.
I don't have any VM getting in the way. There's no chance that the malware is going to detect that it's in a virtualized machine and decide not to release its payload.
Is there any way that it could get out of the VM?
I mean, yes, we've proven there's definitely.
Is it like that hypervisor or something can get
compromised?
Yeah,
there's a couple of ways to do it. Mm. All right, so it's gonna do that. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go ahead, Kara, if you could come back out to us. I'm gonna switch back to the other machine. And I'm going to go ahead and install one of the other drives so that we can get back to business.
Now, so this would work even if you had a Windows 10 install, right? But not one that's like patched this week.
The crypto ransom will work.
Yeah.
But the SMB vulnerability does not exist on Windows 10 anymore.
Okay.
You could infect a single machine. You cannot infect a bunch of Windows 10 machines over the network.
Hmm.
That part is gone. Which is why this hit mostly Windows XP installations, because Windows XP installations weren't being updated. Even Windows 7, I had to go back into my archives to find a version of Windows 7 that was still vulnerable to this, because everything I have has been patched.
Okay.
Aside from the tab and computer.
So your average computer user who has been keeping their stuff up to date should...
They've got Windows 10, yes. And if they've got Windows 7 and they've been keeping it up to date, yes, they should be fine.
Should. Of course.
Just don't run it.
There's, now that I think about it, I'm like, there is one computer on my network that's still running Windows 7, and I don't think it's updated because I never use it.
And remember, all it takes is one machine on a network, because once you have one infected machine on a network, that machine will search the entire network for older vulnerable machines. If it finds one, that machine is now infected.
I might have to remote into my router for a second. I'll do it later.
All right. In just a second, we've got our Windows machine back up. We're gonna actually bring over this little workstation. We want to show you what this looks like on the network, because now that you've seen what it looks like on the machine,
yeah.
Let's see what's happening behind the scenes. But before we do that, let's go ahead and take a moment for these messages. We want to take a moment to thank a sponsor of this episode of Know How, and it's one of our favorite companies, iFixit. Now, iFixit understands the plight of the maker, the DIYer. They understand that often we're lacking the right tools. Have you ever used the wrong tool for the job? Have you ever marred the surface of a tablet or a laptop because you use the flat screwdriver as a pry bar? Yeah, we've all done it. We've all had that frustration where we just want to get something fixed. We want to get something done. But you can do all that without destroying the look, without destroying the functionality. That's because iFixit is there for the maker. iFixit is the provider, the premium provider of everything you need to learn how to fix things. They're constantly posting teardowns and repair videos for popular devices like the Galaxy S8, iPhones, and the Switch. They needed better tools to get the job done, so they created the perfect toolkit, the iconic black and blue ProTech toolkit. Now, this is all new and fully loaded with everything you need for your next fix or DIY project. They've just dropped the price to $59.95, which makes it more affordable. Now, don't let the sleek design fool you. This toolkit's got both beauty and brawn, with high-quality steel bits and tools tough enough to handle any repair or mod that you throw at them. Now, the tool roll makes it compact and easy to store, and it includes a 64-bit driver kit. It has all the bits you need for just about any DIY electronics repair, and a protective case that keeps your bits organized. You open it up, you flip it over, and the bits won't fall out. The bit kit is held in place by a magnetic mat that doubles as a perfect spot to hold tiny components and screws so they don't go wandering off during your fix. And they've also given you a swivel top magnetic precision driver and a flex extension so you can get into those hard to reach places where a regular screwdriver just won't cut it. They've also got a wide variety of plastic opening tools, spudgers, and picks to safely poke and pry with rather than using that flat screwdriver as a cudgel. They've also got a suction cup with a new fancy handle to remove display assemblies from laptops and tablets, and iFixit's own rubber-handed Jimmy pry tool and a set of metal spudgers. They've included ESD-safe tweezers and an ESD safety strap so you don't destroy your job with static shock, which is probably the worst possible thing that can happen to a DIYer and fixer. And the best part is that all of iFixit's tools are backed by iFixit's lifetime warranty. You don't need to buy something to get iFixit's free repair resources. You can check out over 25,000 free repair guides over at iFixit.com because they're not just about sharing their tools, their knowledge. They're also about inviting you in to the community of makers. Folks, we love iFixit, and we know you will too. If you want to tackle your next hack, fix, or build with the ProTech Toolkit, we've got a code that will give you $5 off. Just head over to iFixit.com/twit. And use the code KNOWHOW at checkout to save $5 on your purchase of $10 or more. Again, that's iFixit.com/twit and use the code KNOWHOW. And we thank iFixit for their support of KNOWHOW. Okay, Brian, let's go ahead and get back to business. We've got our Windows 7 box back up and running. Kara, if you please go back over to HDMI 1. Let me log in with our cute little dog there.
Actually, oh, a little doge.
I typed in the wrong password. Oh, no. Right one.
No, you're good.
Yay. Okay, right. So on this one, I already have the pathogen is loaded, but I want to go ahead and put the data files there. We're going to give it something to encrypt.
Do you want to restart now, or do you want to restart later?
You know, I don't ever want to restart, Brian. We'll restart later. Let me copy this over first. That's the one thing with the cloning. Every time you get a fresh installation, you have to restart. Something to remember about this, by the way, is you have to pull the drive out of the computer before you run the payload, because otherwise it will also encrypt the flash drive.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought of that. I probably would have made that mistake. Did you?
No, because
you're aware of it.
I actually have protocols for this. I've been kind of rusty. I haven't done this in a while, but when I'm doing security stuff, I have a clean side and a dirty side. And you can go from the clean side to the dirty side, but you can never go from the dirty side to the clean side. And that's just how I protect everything.
It's like a medical procedure.
It really is. Because, I mean, you got to remember, I'm working on Windows machines. That's my thing. So I'm working on Windows machines with a pathogen that can destroy Windows machines. I actually have a Raspberry and a Mac that I keep there just because I want something that I can safely work on these files with. Like if I have to get into it, I'm afraid of accidentally executing.
To dig through it. Yeah, because you keep mentioning that it's not really an elegant file. Is there anything that stood out to you that made it that way?
If you actually look at the source code, so people have decompiled this, it looks like people just got packages, slammed them together.
This is basically just the stuff that got pulled from the shadow brokers. They got the information from the NSA and then somebody just threw stuff on top of it.
Woohoo.
So, and this is stuff that wasn't patched because the NSA was stockpiling a lot of these exploits too.
Yeah, Microsoft did a big thing about saying, look, this could have been avoided if the NSA had told us about this exploit. We could have patched it a long time ago.
Yeah.
But of course, the NSA didn't want that.
They were actively using it. Yeah.
So, yeah. Huh. How about that? All right, let's go ahead and do this again. We've got my, if you go over to HDMI 2, Kara, we're going to go ahead and start up a new, there we go. So this is tapped. So right now, if you go to the overhead, this computer is attached to this tap, which is going to a router that goes nowhere. So this doesn't actually have internet access because I also don't want this sending probes on the internet. Mm-hmm. That's just mean. Yeah, that's a bad thing. But this is another one of the things, like a bit of my protocols. Whenever I'm running anything that's network aware, I have the infected color and the clean color. So infected here is purple. Uh-huh. The infected never goes into a machine that's not supposed to be deliberately infected.
Okay.
Whereas this is just a tap line. So this does go to a Windows 7 box.
But you're just reading what's passing. You're
correct.
Not sending anything.
This is not actually connecting. You cannot communicate to the orange wire through the purple wires.
That's smart.
Yeah, so that's how this is going to work. So I'm tapping it. Now, Kara, if you go back to HDMI 2, this is what it's reading right now. So this is pretty typical for a Windows 7 box. Mm-hmm. I've got a bunch of DNS queries for Microsoft.com. It's actually trying to talk to the update server. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of ARPs, and that's address resolution protocol. So it's just saying, okay, hey, I'm new here. What's on the network? But not a whole lot. It's actually kind of quiet. This is all just pretty typical traffic. In fact, let me go ahead and switch this so that it doesn't auto scroll because I want it to stay with the most. There we go. Mm-hmm. There we go. Okay, now we got to do the thing, Brian. Actually, here, why don't you do the thing?
You want me to click the button?
Yeah, so. Go back to the other computer, Kara.
I'll do the honors, the breaking champagne over it. Yeah. And so,
open up the sample data so we can see, make sure that those are still, there we go. And actually, let's go ahead and open up a task manager window so you can see the process as it first starts up. There we go. Oop. Stop that.
And so, I mean, no one in their right mind would have downloaded this to their desktop.
You really
should. And then activated.
That'd be bad.
But
okay,
imagine I went to a website.
And so now we can see how much CPU time it's going to take up and how quickly those files get encrypted. So the process has started. 2, 3. Oh, so it's like 4 seconds and the files have encrypted. However, it's still going to be a couple of seconds. You're going to get a minute here before it deletes the unencrypted files.
Because is it still probably probing?
Like, it's probing. It's going through everything. So it's anything that's attached, anything that it can reach over the network, anything that might be hooked in over a USB port, it's going to encrypt. And once it has them all cataloged, it's going to start destroying all the unencrypted files.
Is it sending any traffic through the tap now?
Well, yeah, let's take a look. So go ahead and go back to the other computer. It's now become crazy busy. So if this was the first variant, one of the DNS entries that I would see here would be sending it to the kill site. But you'll notice there's a lot of traffic that's been picking up. One of the most obvious ones is LLMNR. So let me separate that out. LLMNR. What this is doing, this is the local link multicast name resolution protocol. This allows the computer to find out what else is on the network.
Oof.
So this, all it's doing right now is it keeps reaching out into the network saying, hey, who's here?
Anyone
hey,
here?
I'm new in the neighborhood.
Are you vulnerable? Oh, let me come over.
Now, if there was another machine, what you would start to see is a lot of TCP port 445 traffic. That's
back and
Samba.
Forth. Right.
And what that is once it knows the other machine is on the network, it will start probing. It will say, hey, are you vulnerable to this? Are you vulnerable to this?
Which on your inside your house network, that port would be typically open, right?
Inside.
Yeah, inside.
If it's open outside, then
you're getting hosed. Yeah,
you're getting hosed. That's a really, really bad thing. But so this is actually one of the signs that I now have my network program to look for. LLMNR isn't used that often. So if suddenly I have a computer that is just spewing those packets, it just keeps asking who's here, who's here, who's here,
yeah,
it's probably malicious. And so my network, my switch, it has policy on it. It will automatically disconnect that port. It will put it on its own VLAN.
Oh, okay.
So it still thinks it's connected, but it can't touch it. It'll warn me. It'll say, hey, I'm noticing suspicious traffic. Do you want to allow this
allow
to go through?
Okay.
Right.
Somebody in the chat room just asked a good question. What happens? It was Ed. What happens if you get infected? It's encrypted all your files, and then you make like a new file. Does it encrypt that after?
Yep.
So after the fact,
anything I plug into this computer now
will get infected.
Will get encrypted.
Ah,
because it's running. That's always going to be running.
Boy.
It's now a process that's running in the background, and even when I kill it, remember the double pulsar backdoor is still there.
Yeah. Oh, man. So if you plugged in an external drive into this after it's been infected,
it would encrypt that.
But it wouldn't then, you wouldn't then be able to take that drive and plug it into another computer. It wouldn't then activate the exploit.
No.
It would just be that drive encrypted.
Right. So it'd be all the data on that drive would be encrypted, but the exploit is actually not carried in a USB connected device.
And
now, if for some reason it was this drive, which actually does have the file on it, and I had like an old XP machine that did auto run,
okay. Yeah, then it would.
But that's such a confluence of really, really bad things. So it's officially, there we go.
Oops.
So now it's switched over, and I should get my little, there we go.
And the timer has
now
started.
Okay, go ahead and come back. Notice to the other computer.
Mm-hmm.
See all this?
Yeah.
So now that it's firmly entrenched, these are those TCP packets that are reaching out looking for the kill switch.
Okay. Which other versions or more modified versions don't do now. Right,
right. But all port 445 is actually in use now. Look at all this traffic that this machine is generating. There's nothing else on this network. It's just this infected Windows 7 box. And what it's trying to do is it's trying to propagate. And you'll also notice there are some links here. There are some addresses that don't exist in the network. They're outside. So this is actively trying to get out into the internet to try to infect machines out there.
Jeez. Wow. So what happens if you... So it says Bitcoin. What happens when you click that? That just takes you to a Bitcoin site?
It's if you go back to HDMI 2, or HDMI 1, I'm sorry.
Because there's no way, I guess that's kind of the nice thing about the Bitcoin is the anonymity.
Yeah.
But finding out where the Bitcoins are going
this
to or
actually,
who you're paying.
This does have instructions. So if you want to pay, they give you instructions on how to get there. Because they want to make it as easy as possible for you to do this. By the way, look, here's the language loadout.
Right.
So they really wanted this to be an inclusive package.
Has anyone reported like how much money they've probably made from this?
Probably about 70,000 so far, which for something of this scale is nothing. And again, it really isn't elegant.
No,
it works. It's very effective because it's using something that the NSA developed. But I mean, it's basically just crypto ransomware that they've tacked a worm onto.
Right.
Yeah.
Piggybacking.
Yeah. All right. So now we see what's happening. And I love this. If you could, can you put this in a small screen? The little Wireshark.
What?
So HDMI 1. Put it in a $2. I want to see it keep running because it's so much fun. No, the other input. It's so much fun to see what this is trying to do because if you watch it long enough, you'll see it keeps hammering this network. In fact, if I brought two laptops with me,
mm-hmm.
one of them is a completely vulnerable Vista machine. And I haven't done this test yet, and I don't want to do it live, but I want to plug it into this network.
And see it propagate to the
machine.
See
how fast it gets over. Because I know that's vulnerable to SMB.
Yeah.
I also have a Windows 10 laptop that I know isn't. But this acts differently once it knows there's other devices on the network. Once it knows that there's at least one other device, that traffic screen just goes crazy because it just starts throwing traffic against.
Right.
Against the other device. So that's one of the things to look for. Look for LLMNR. That's a dead giveaway. Look for a lot of traffic on port 445. That's the Samba port,
mm-hmm.
even if you're not transferring anything. And then also look for a lot of probing attacks outside the network. And of course, the only way you're really going to see that is if you have a tool like a tap that lets you intercept this traffic.
Yeah, and as scary as it is with just the ransomware, I guess with this attack, you could piggyback anything you wanted onto those.
Absolutely.
So you could do it more subtly. Like you can infect computers without anybody knowing or leaving like traces that are as obvious as encrypting all the files. Like install keyloggers or... Yeah.
Well, crazy. I mean, that's the thing. There are frameworks like the Metasploit framework, which is great. It's a research framework. to help you learn about how these things work, just like what we're doing right now. But it essentially allows people to say, I'm going to take something from column A, something from column B, I'm going to put them together, and now that's my attack package.
Wow.
It's really simple to do. It's actually kind of scary simple to do.
I'd like to talk to Mudge about it.
Yeah, right? Right?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and, you know, I just kind of...
What? You like watching the traffic go by?
I'm sorry. I just...
It's fun because it's safe right now.
It's safe, yeah. Right. If this was loose on my network, I'd be freaking out right now.
Right.
Let's
You'd
go
be unplugging wires, turning off all the power. Yeah.
Let's go ahead and talk about some of the practical things that you can do if you're worried about this. The first, I'd say, of course, it's always going to be personal security. You don't open attachments. Mm-hmm. Don't even accept email from people that you don't know. Mm-hmm. I know that's very difficult for a lot of people, but especially if you're running something like an old email client that auto-previews files, that could be really, really bad. Make sure everything is patched, everything is updated. If you're using Windows XP or Server 2003, stop it. I know there's a lot of infrastructure that's tied to those older versions of Windows, but this is just going to get worse. This is patched right now, but this is not the end of it because... The attackers know that there's such a large installed base of machines that will never be updated that they're always going to attack this vector first. It's the lowest hanging fruit.
Right.
Something else is backup. I know this sounds very simple, but yeah, you need backups. You need lots of backups, consistent backups. And here's the thing. You need to back it up.
And then
remove it.
It's got to be air gap it or something.
Yeah. Like if you are backing up to a NAS... that was mapped to your computer, it jumps. So it's not that the cryptoware runs on the NAS. It runs on the computer, but it will encrypt everything on the NAS and then delete.
Which could be terabytes.
Could be terabytes.
Yeah.
Right.
Whew.
Yeah. That one will take a little bit longer. So you saw how long it took on a machine that had almost nothing.
Right.
As you increase the amount of data that it's encrypting, it's going to take longer and longer and longer.
So say that you think that you've been infected and you do have like a machine with a larger amount of files that need to be encrypted and you're like, why is my machine running slow all of a sudden? Could you look through your task manager for that and then be like, okay, like shut down the computer?
Shut it down, pull the drive out, plug it into another computer, copy off the files.
Okay.
Because notice how it didn't give us the warning screen. If you go back to HDMI 1, Kara, it didn't give us this warning screen until all the files were deleted.
It was completed.
And it knew that it had done everything it could. So there is a response time here. And if it's encrypting a lot, there's a chance that you can get to it before it's finished encrypting. And then maybe it hasn't yet deleted the non-encrypted files.
Okay. Oof.
You'd be really lucky, so don't count on that, but it's possible. If you see that file pop up in your task manager, yeah, shut it down immediately. You're in the process of encrypting.
Okay, and other best practices, don't plug random USBs into your computer. That's a Mr. Robot. That's like a well-known, don't just plug anything into your computer or on your network.
Right. And the other thing, and this is what we're actually doing next week. It's what we were going to do this week, but WannaCry took precedent. It's another networking 102 topic. We're going to be doing the three dumb router setup that Steve Gibson suggested.
Yeah.
Just because you're on a trusted network doesn't mean you should trust the network.
Hey, right.
Because anything can be on the network. So if you want to protect yourself, you know what? Maybe it's time that you had a personal firewall against just your machine. That's how it works on my network.
Yeah.
If one machine gets infected, it actually can't see the other machines unless I specifically allow it to.
Okay.
I know most people aren't going to have the $10,000 worth of enterprise gear that I have, but you can get to a very close approximation with some cheap routers.
Okay. I want to do that now with the, I think it's the Synology 1900 AC, mm-hmm. I think is the one I have.
Yep.
Like, you can do that on there, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, because I think there's a specific IP address on my internal network that I'm like, yeah, this one, let's like, separate it so it doesn't talk to anything else.
Okay, well, you know, Brian, I'm glad this all worked.
Yeah, me too.
I'm actually going to, there's a weekend project. I want to see how fast I can make it infect a cluster of Windows XP machines.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's going to, like, just nab them all.
Yeah, no, I'd be curious to see how fast it can spread like that. Thanks for doing this project. That was fascinating.
Well, I mean, it's not too difficult. It's just I got off a plane just like 12 hours ago.
And then to have this demo work
I was deathly afraid because I was so tired. I haven't slept in 49 hours.
That's pretty average for you.
It's pretty average for me. But I was afraid because when I get tired, I get sloppy.
Yeah, you make a mistake, and then all of a sudden your whole network goes down.
And I was already violating some of my protocols. There was some dirty stuff that was moving back to the clean zone. I'm like, oh, you have to get this done, but I don't want to infect my network.
I'm tired. Yeah, well, I think the studio's still working, so I think we're okay.
Lights are still on. Stream's still working.
Is the TriCaster running slow at all over there, Kara? Is it okay?
I think it's okay.
That's right. The TriCaster actually is vulnerable. We can't update it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Actually, Stretch 1931 has another thing. Go back to our Networking 101 episode on net scans, port scans. And make sure, please, do this now. Or go to Steve Gibson's Shields Up. Mm-hmm. Just run a scan against your IP and make sure that TCP port 445 is not open. If it's open, go into your router and set a firewall rule to block it right now. There's no reason why that port should be accessible from the outside world. And if it is, that means that the computers on the inside of the network could potentially be attacked from a computer elsewhere using the SMB buffer overflow.
I'm just going to check that real quick because now I'm super paranoid.
Folks, I know this was a lot of information, but we're going to make sure that you get everything. So everything from the setup that I've been using.
No, literally everything, even the exploit.
We're going to put it this way. We've hidden this code somewhere on one of the links on the Twit TV website. We're going to see if you can find it. But, Brian, where do they find that horribly, horribly bad cyber pathogen?
You can find that on twit.tv/KH with all our horrible cyber pathogens. And not only that, you can subscribe or download the episode while you're there. Or if you get the exploit, it might do that for you. It might just make you subscribe and download.
Absolutely. Also, don't forget that we've got a social group on Google+. You just go to Google+, look for KnowHow, ask to join. Very short approval process to keep out the spam accounts. But once you're in, you get access to over 11,000 Kitas. That's our know-it-alls. That's you. People who are on every stage of their Maker DIY journey. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic place to find new projects, to maybe ask a couple of questions, or maybe to answer questions to people who are new to the Maker game. Again, just go to Google+ and look for KnowHow.
And this is probably one of those projects where we don't want to see people's screenshots.
Don't do this.
I got infected, and I'm going to post this project on Google+. No, don't do that. But
I will say this. If you do play with this stuff, please, 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 please do not be cavalier about where you leave it. It shouldn't be on your machine, but if you're going to put it on removable storage, make sure that removable storage is set aside and people know not to run it, because bad things happen.
Bad things happen. And it's happened before.
It hasn't. And it will all happen again.
But you can also follow us on Twitter. I am @Cranky_Hippo.
You're going to find me @PadreSJ. And we've got a third member of our crew, wonderful woman.
She's going to be Wonder Woman.
I am going to be Wonder Woman for Halloween. Kara Cole.
Kara, you got to tell them where they can find your Twitter.
Oh, @Kara080.
Yeah, there you go.
That's it.
Until next time, I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Do it.
Oh. Bad.
Bad.